This episode of the Sport Lifestyle Podcast is presented by Empirica. That's Empirica, E-M-P-I-R-I-K-A. Empirica exists to amplify your brand's growth, a digital partner to the ambitious, the creative engine launching brands and igniting growth, the unagency where relationships matter, not transactions. Let's connect at EmpiricaMedia.com. That's EmpiricaMedia.com. Let's get the show started.
This is the Sport Lifestyle Podcast, where the trade of sport collides with fashion and innovation. Your hosts, Mike Guggat, Neil Schwartz, and John Peters, break down news, discuss trends, and interview industry influencers. The Sport Lifestyle Podcast is on now.
This is the Sport Lifestyle Podcast. I'm Mike Guggat. Hey, Poobah. Does Jeannie know you're playing a round?
Mike, I know you're referring, of course, to my conversation that you and I had, which, by the way, was supposed to be on the DL that I have been communicating with Paige Sparanac, of course, the golfer and internet fitness model who happens to have her own podcast, Playing Around with Paige Sparanac. But Paige and I have become podcasting friends What can I say, Mike? I may be too old to rock and roll, but clearly not ready to die.
It's too bad we couldn't get it to rhyme with slipping into her DM.
Got to keep the show PG-13, don't we?
Clearly, we'll move away from this conversation. I'm sure there are folks that know exactly what you're talking about. I had to write this stuff down because I wasn't familiar. Lots happening in the world, but before we get to that, you have a special guest, Brendan Walsh, and it is not from 90210 fame. Tell us about Brendan.
Yeah, I sat down with Brendan Walsh. Brendan is a partner with a company called Data Market Services, and they're a DC-based firm that provides what they like to call a clear path to helping organizations utilize data. So they're out there working with associations, lobbyists, and other organizations, really helping them identify what kind of data is important. But what's interesting also is that Brendan's background is as in economics, and he was a senior analyst at Discovery Capital Management. Brendan has an MA, and he also has his MBA. And Brendan was, you know, knee deep in this kind of economics world. And, you know, he was able to bring some really interesting perspectives and ideas and things that, you know, in some ways, you know, we've talked about these unintended consequences, and the unintended consequences of this COVID-19 crisis are so far reaching that it's hard to even keep track, Mike.
You guys got into a little bit of the, you know, what traditionally had been leading indicators no longer really provide the insights they did in the past, right?
But yeah, it's like, you know, everything you thought you knew, you don't know. And everything you thought you believed, you can't believe. You know, it's weird because we've always relied on the past, you know, as our predictor to the future. You know, and even in a typical recession type situation, you know, people would go back and look at 2007, 2008, 2009 and say, look, here's what happened back then. So here's what we suspect is going to happen now. Unfortunately, we are in a black swan event, the likes we have never been in before. I guess the last time there was a pandemic, I'm sure I'm going to get the date wrong, but I think it was 1918 with the flu situation. But in the internet generation, in the, you know, in the speed of communications generation, in the everything that's occurred generation, you know, this is the mother of all black swan events right now. And, you know, it's just created this kind of ripple effect. And, you know, Brendan and I talked about the fact that you can't rely on the past to help you make future decisions. You know, you really have to look at different types of data, different types of situations, and really understand how it all fits together. Because that's the other part of the story, Mike. You know, it's just not one piece of data that's going to give you your answers. It's really going to be a bunch. And, interesting.
I'm going to go out on a limb and not trust the past and believe you that you're friends with Paige and you guys are podcast buddies.
But let's to Paige.
Let's get into, as we're talking about the pandemic, but also what is happening, you know, from a social perspective. And I think it's old news at this point, the things that the founder of CrossFit said, but that was right at the intersection of, you know, the pandemic and then the George Floyd, you know, story and kind of where we are with Black Lives Matters and the election and, you know, the impact that these sort of momentous events have, not just on, you know, the human experience, but also, you know, the economy and other things. Where do you want to begin?
God, who knows where to begin? But I guess let's start with what you just talked about, Mike, and that is the situation with George Floyd and Black Lives Matter. And then, you know, it really kind of hit its, I almost want to say it hit its peak, you know, with the, or maybe that was the beginning of it, with the CEO of CrossFit. And, you know, where he really came out with some very insensitive things. And it just seemed to really get out of control from there, or maybe out of control wasn't the right word, or right sentence or the right way to put it. But, you know, Mike, we are at the confluence right now of a situation where, you know, we've got social issues, economic issues, the political situation. You know, we are a country that is more divided today than, you know, look, I've made no secret, you know, the fact that I'm the grand poobah and I'm over 60 years old. And, you know, in my 60 years, I can never remember a situation where the country has just had all of these things to deal with at one time. It's like somebody threw like the whole country in a giant blender, you know, and hit speed number 10. And it's just very difficult to really try to wrap your arms around what's important right now. What matters? You know, are the social issues, the economic issues, the political issues, or even the national security issues?
And I think that's what everybody's been trying to weigh. And from a, you know, business perspective, is your livelihood based on that? Or is your livelihood based on being healthy and surviving, you know, this pandemic? And I think, you know, it's like whiplash. Yesterday was a momentous day, and I'll make this topical. You know, John Lewis was, you know, is lying in state in the state capitol in Alabama. And I just want to share a quick John Lewis story. You know, in my former life, I pretty much lived on an airplane Monday through Friday. And I happened to get on a plane in Washington flying to Atlanta. And this is over a decade ago. And this was back when most people, you'd sit in first class. And if, you know, somebody came on the plane that was a veteran or for that matter was currently serving, you'd give up your seat to that person. I got on the plane and someone had already given up their seat to a young man that, you know, had done a tour in Iraq. And John Lewis came on the plane. And as he was coming through, he leaned over me and actually said to that serviceman, "Thank you for your service." And I offered my seat to John Lewis. And John Lewis said, "I appreciate the offer, but ethically, I can't take your seat. It would be an ethics violation. But thank you. And thank you to the veteran for his service."
You know, that's the kind of way that I'd like to see our politicians act, you know, set the right example, you know, really have empathy and really understand, you know, what's going on right now here in this country. I mean, I hate to say it and I hate to cast, you know, up on one person, but, you know, we're in the middle of this pandemic. The airlines are asking people to put a mask on, you know, the most basic of things. And here, Ted Cruz, you know, senator from Texas, is flying on an airplane on American Airlines and not wearing his mask. So, you know, you see, you know, politicians like John Lewis, you know, who really understood, you know, their place in history and their place, you know, in terms of, you know, where they need to be of setting an example and being the right kind of politician. And then you've got a number of others that just can't seem to find a way to do the right thing. And I know that probably sounds a little political on my part, but this is the way I see it, Mike.
Well, I don't disagree with you. I think the documentary I'm really looking forward to seeing is John Lewis's Good Trouble. And there's something to be said about good trouble and these other things that are going on. That being said, you know, here we are more than halfway through 2020 that I think many were optimistic about. What are some of the insights and things that you're seeing? You know, you work with a bunch of different clients, some of which actually measure consumer sentiment. What are consumers saying?
You know, right now, consumers are saying that they are worried about this, you know, relapse, if you want to call it, or second wave, or whatever this is supposed to be. The interesting thing is that when we looked at consumer confidence, which really tells about how people are feeling about the economy, in June, we started to see the economy take a little bit of an upward turn. You know, so everybody interpreted that as, hey, maybe, you know, we bottomed out, we're through the weeds. But then in July, what happened? As we started more and more reports about Florida, California, Texas, Arizona, all of a sudden consumer confidence dropped again. Consumer sentiment. Now, consumer sentiment is more about how people feel, more about the emotions, Mike. But consumer sentiment also down about as low as I've seen it since way back in 2008, 2007. So, you know, we're seeing people, number one, reacting economically to what's going on, you know, and I'm very curious to see what's going to happen, you know, with the situation with the second stimulus package and payments to Americans. Because quite frankly, you know, if they take that money away from a lot of people, there will be, you know, I think a lot more economic strife and there will be a lot more economic pressure. But, you know, all of the signs, you know, despite what Larry Kudlow said yesterday on, I think he was on Face the Nation or Meet the Press or one of those Sunday chat shows, this is not going to be a V recovery. And anybody who thinks it's going to be a V recovery really doesn't understand what's going on out there. You know,
let me ask you this though. Do you think it could have been a V recovery had we front loaded the pain and everybody got in line for a bigger purpose or a bigger cause?
You know, Mike, that's a tough question because there's a lot of ifs that really, you know, have to be answered. Number one, if we would have realized the potential damage that, you know, could have occurred as a result of COVID-19, you know, if we had gotten our testing program up to speed faster, if we had not, you know, let our PPE supply get so short, if, you know, I hate to say it, you know, I like to tell people all the time that, you know, you cannot change the past no matter what you do. You can only have a minimal effect on today, but the future you can change. What bothers me right now, Mike, is that we're making some of the same mistakes that we made back 2 months ago. We're making them again. And, you know, by opening up states too soon, by not letting the virus run its natural course, by not mandating that people wear masks, you know, all of these things, you know, I think could have changed the trajectory of this, you know, of the pandemic and the economic conditions that are occurring as a result of it.
So it's now not all doom and gloom for our industry specifically. And as you know, Kareth and I and our little family can't sit still. So after 100 days of quarantine, we loaded up the car like the you know, family vacation, the Griswolds headed for the Gulf of Mexico and then decided after a month of being there that we should come to California. But we did it because we could control our environment, where we went, and you know, maintain our quarantine. The thing that was amazing to me was from Dallas, Texas, all the way to Monterey Bay, California. And we kind of took a northern route up through Colorado, Wyoming, down through Utah and Nevada. Almost everything that passed us had either was an RV, had a trailer attached to it, had a trailer that was full of bikes, kayaks, stand-up paddle boards, boats. Unreal moment for the outdoor industry. And we somehow survived 40 hours of traveling with a toddler. And I look back and now regret all the time I spent on an airplane, as crazy as it sounds, because there is so much out there to do.
Well, Mike, I think number one, you said you made a really interesting point is that it hasn't been bad for everybody. You know, activities and sports like biking. You know, if you walked into a bike shop or even went online to try to buy a bike, especially a lower price bike, you know, you might have to wait 2 to 3 weeks to get delivery of a bicycle. If you're a runner, you know, running shoes, you know, Pipeline's a little bit thready, although it is starting to get, you know, more bulked up, but people are out running. You know, one of the positive things we've seen, Mike, is that when you talk to running shoe dealers, you know, in specialty running stores, you know, about 20%, 26%, actually, based on some of the numbers I've read from, you know, some of the companies that I work with, say that people that are coming in to buy running shoes are doing so to walk because walking has become the preferred socially distanced activity that people can do no matter where you are, no matter how old you are. So again, there are some activities, stand up paddle boarding, Mike, like you mentioned, a number of the outdoor activities can be done in a social distancing kind of environment. But, you know, team sports, you know, that's an entirely other story. And I think it's going to be a while before, you know, team sports are really going to be able to, you know, gain some traction. I mean, you know, we talked to, you know, part of the conversation I had with Brendan, he has young children and a young daughter who play travel. And he's like, hey, I don't know how they're going to, you know, get this thing somehow revved up again. You know, his wife, very concerned about his daughter's safety, as she should be. And just doesn't know how they're going to be able to ever resume travel soccer. So, I mean, I think it does have some wide-ranging implications. I just think this thing's going to take a long time to unwind.
Well, I think in that unwinding, we're going to want intelligent insights from people like Brendan. So let's get to Brendan.
Welcome back to the Sport Lifestyle Podcast. We're really excited today to be talking to Brendan Walsh. Brendan is a partner at Data Market Services, and that's a DC-based firm that provides a clear and defined path that helps organizations and associations utilize research for thought leadership and using a bunch of data-driven processes. Also, Brendan is the co-host on the HPS Macrocast, which is from Hamilton Place Strategy. And I've had a lot of great discussions recently with Brendan about what's going on with the economy, stock market, even just general COVID-19 discussion. So Brendan, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me. A lot of fascinating stuff going on, and it changes every day. So there's no limit to the things we can talk about.
I know, it does seem like the information and everything's coming at us at a fire hose rate these days. In fact, you know, right before we started talking today, you mentioned something about the controversy going on in Virginia. Do you want to expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, so Mike is in Western Virginia, and there's actually a little battle going on because the song Country Roads, the guy who wrote it actually wrote it about Western Virginia, not West Virginia. Because like the Shenandoah Valley is really in Virginia. It only goes into West Virginia slightly, and the Blue Ridge Mountains and all that stuff. So a kid had a Twitter rant about it, and then the West Virginia Board of Recreation, I guess, took it up, and they sent out all these tweets defending themselves. So it's kind of a funny little battle going on between Western Virginia and West Virginia.
It seems like there's battles going on all over the place right now. It seems like it seems like no one can agree with anyone, and we're going through. But let me back up. Brendan, let me back up for a second. You know, why don't you explain a little bit about your background and also maybe a little bit about Data Market Services?
Yeah. So in my previous career, I worked for a hedge fund up in Connecticut called Discovery Capital. So I was there for about 15 years. But 2 years ago, I moved down here to D.C. One of my old colleagues had moved about 5 years ago to D.C. His name's John Fagan, and he's the co-host of the HPS Macrocast I do. He was the head of the markets room at the Treasury. So he had an idea. So the markets room does all the market analysis for the Treasury and the White House, but they're not allowed to send it out anywhere else. So he had an idea to start a company. We called it Markets Policy Partners. So we do the same kind of analysis for the market that the Treasury markets room does, but we do it for the broader government and policy making community, also private sector. And then through that move to DC, I saw that there was a large void. You know, in my old job, I used alternative data sets and understand the value that they had. And I came down here and I got to know a number of our clients at the markets policy are trade associations. And just through being down here, you meet a lot of interesting people. And I saw that there was a kind of a void that they just didn't even know that these data sets existed. And I saw, especially, you know, for lobbying firms and the trade associations, that there's, and also the customers of these trade associations, there's this huge opportunity to fill that void. So through my contacts here, Laura Arth, who knows the trade associations, and then in my old life, my friend Matt Delefano, who's still involved in the investment community, we kind of formed Data Market Services to try to fill that void and be the bridge between you know, kind of the New York investing data set crowd, and then the kind of the policymaking DC crowd. So we started about 6 months ago, kind of really getting it up and going. And the uptake's been pretty good. Obviously, you know, not being able to leave your house has made it a little more challenging to sell. But on the flip side, it's shown the value of these kinds of data sets to the world. Because traditional data sets don't really matter anymore. You know, I don't really care what, I don't know, industrial production was in March. You know, it was bad, you know, but you also get that data point a month and a half after March ended.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So in terms of analyzing what, and it's not even that you can predict what the future is now, because we're all beholden to a virus. So, you know, behavior can change, but at least you understand where people are today with these data sets.
Yeah, on the past shows, we've talked a little bit about alternative data, as I'm kind of involved in that category. I know Mike and John, my co-hosts, like to bust my balls a little bit when I use the term alternative data, because they, of course, think of alternative facts.
Yeah.
But really, alternative data is about combining multiple data sets to create new signals and new data that combines a variety of different looks. Hey, I want to talk a little bit specific to sports, but I think before we get in there, Brendan, can we talk a little bit about, you know, the economy right now and what you think's going on?
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, it's somewhat simple. We had to shut down the whole world, and both it was a policy decision, but also we also see from these, going back to the alternative data sets, people were scared in March and April. So whether the governor said you could go out or not, people weren't going out. And, you know, you weren't going to go to a restaurant, things like that. So the whole world shut down. 25% of the workforce basically was out of job. We had a huge fiscal response to try to fill that void. Now we're reopening the economy, and I mean, it's just kind of math. When everything goes to zero, when things start going again, that first bounce back's gonna be big. And it is relatively big, and it's V-shaped. The question here now going forward, are we gonna keep that V-shape going up, or are we just gonna kind of do like a bunch of W's? I'm kind of more in the, I don't think we necessarily have to do the W, but I think we kind of plateau for a little bit. And as people have to get comfortable with this new reality. The virus is still there. Even though we as America are kind of bored with it and we want to go back to the way it was, you know, I think the data set, the COVID data that's coming out of the South and the Southwest is showing that the virus is still very much alive and still very virulent. And people are calling it a second wave. It's not a second wave. It's just the South didn't get the first wave yet. They're experiencing what we in the Northeast experienced in March and April. So while I think the vast majority of the economy is going to keep slowly growing and rebounding, I don't think we're in a V-shaped recovery. And, you know, come July, it's just going to be back to normal. Until a vaccine is found, I think we're in this weird new normal where you wear masks and you don't go inside.
Yeah, I try not to make too many predictions because I know every time I make a prediction, I end up kind of eating my words. In fact, again, the boys have reminded me a few times on a few predictions that I've made and where I kind of ate it on that one. But, you know, Brendan, you know, we know sports are a really big part of this economy and probably a lot bigger than people even realize. The revenue generated from the NFL, Major League Baseball, the NBA are huge. You know, limiting to events is going to put a real kind of pressure on the economy. Do you think that that's going to put long-term pressure or short-term?
So that's a really interesting question. I mean, it's definitely going to put short-term because I just don't see any scenario where we have, especially professional sporting events, where we have fans. You know, maybe in SEC country, you know, they'll allow fans in Mississippi or Alabama. But, you know, Yankee Stadium's not going to be filled this year, whether we get 60 games or 75 or whatever they're arguing over. And the same with the NFL. It's just too much of a liability to allow that. So that's just in that bubble. Okay, fans don't go in, NFL doesn't receive the revenue, MLB doesn't. But especially with baseball, I mean, pretty much every stadium is kind of downtown and there's a whole infrastructure around it with bars and restaurants. You know, I'm from Massachusetts and the amount of people that are outside of a of a Red Sox game before the game at the bars and restaurants are monstrous. And a lot of these people don't go to the game. They're just, they'll stay and watch the game from the bars. And A, there's no game to watch right now. And then B, even when they start, you're not going to allow fans in. So you're not going to go to the bar to watch. And also we're not going to allow monstrous amount of people inside restaurants anytime soon until the vaccine. So all of that has trickle down effects. And, you know, you don't take an Uber to that bar. So you just kind of can keep going, and you see why there's so many people unemployed, because in the service sector part of our country is monstrous. And right now we don't really have many services that we can safely do.
Sure.
And that's just the professional. So my next door neighbor is a big Georgia booster. And he was going over the economics of what college football provides to a lot of these schools. So, I mean, basically at the big schools, they fund all the other sports. So I'm really worried about, I think people are also too optimistic that we're going to have football. I think we'll start the season and then it's going to turn into a disaster. But that's where you're going to have to cut those secondary sports that don't produce the revenue. And not even just revenue for the other sports. A lot of these colleges rely on it to fund the entire budget of the college.
Yes. You know, we're going to be examining a lot of the financial implications, you know, for college football in some upcoming episodes. But Brendan, I know your daughter, perfect example. She plays youth sports. You know, how are you handling that? Are you going to get her back in there or not?
So she is 8 and she does travel soccer, and she did it for the first time this year. And, you know, it's not cheap. It was, you know, $4,000 for an 8-year-old to, and we only travel, you know, say 45 minutes away. So we're not, you know, getting on planes and staying in hotels. But I mean, just kind of coming from taking away whether I think it's healthy for an 8-year-old to do that, we don't. I just look at it from an economic standpoint, and I just don't think this soccer association is going to be there next year. I think they're going to have to file bankruptcy. So I don't want to give them money right now for next season and have to be a creditor. So, and I think that's the reality of a lot of these private youth sports. They're not designed to have a rainy day fund.
Right.
They rely on new money coming in. And they have to pay coaches, they have to pay, you know, refs and things like that. And these aren't like huge, high-paying jobs. So it's not like a coach can afford to wait a year for a vaccine to come next year. They're just going to kind of have to move on and find another job. So I think it's going to be fascinating what happens in youth sports. It's going to be a consequence. I think a lot of these aren't going to be able to survive. But I also think it's going to potentially be a reset of our values. You know, I grew up playing 3 sports. You know, we didn't do huge travel stuff. When I was in high school was when AAU was starting. Sure. And I played that. But it was AAU on, you know, light at that point. It's not what AAU grew to be, which is now a billions of dollars.
Huge.
Yeah, it's kind of corrupt, too.
Uh-oh.
As we're seeing from the Nike and the Adidas. Actually, ironically, it's not ironic, it's just a funny story. The key, the guy, TJ Gaznola, who testified in all of these cases, he was the bag man. He was my summer coach.
Wow.
Yeah. He's a really funny guy, and he was hysterical on the testifying stand. But he was the one that, you know, testified against, you know, Kansas and all that. But when you see, you know, just how much money is involved in these sports, going back to if we can't play, that's going to have huge implications for the economy.
I think when a lot of people talk about the economy, they don't realize, A, there are a lot of unintended consequences, and there are also a lot of cascading type of situations. In fact, Brendan, you and I were talking earlier in the week, and you mentioned a statistic to me that kind of blew me away. And that was that you said that 20% of the hotel rooms in New York may never be occupied again or will not get used. I mean, explain that a little bit more to me. And
yeah,
and you, so yeah.
It was a real estate, think tank, and they were looking at New York, and you know, it's not even just analysis. They're talking to hotel management, and they think that there's a good chance that just 20% of hotel rooms in New York City just don't reopen because there's not going to be the demand. And I mean, I think what we're doing right now, the three of us are all different places doing a Zoom. I've done a million Zoom meetings. When it's safe to travel, I will travel if it's needed, but it's so much more efficient to just get out of bed and do a call rather than waste 3 days of traveling to meet face to face. So I think there's still an important value in some face to face interaction, but it doesn't have to be 100%. And I think the hotel industry is realizing that, and every business in the world, I think, has experienced these 3 months that people working from home can actually be more efficient than the office. And Zoom meetings can produce the same amount of sales as in-face meetings. So when we get the vaccine, I think life is going to, for the most part, go back to normal, but there's going to be things that change. And I think the ones that are changed are, this is causing us to adopt technology quicker, whether it's the payment or Zoom calls and things like that. And that has, like we said, trickle down effect. It's good for Zoom, but it's not particularly good for Uber or hotel rooms or the airline industry.
You know, Brendan and I are involved in some data projects, and Brendan just mentioned something very interesting, is that with one of the data companies that I work with, a company called Prosper Insights and Analytics, they do a monthly consumer study. And our data in the month of June showed that about 25% of people that are now working at home that weren't previously want to continue working from home.
Yeah. So another one of my friends, his sister-in-law is the head of HR at a British retail store, a fairly high-end one. And she was totally against people working from home, but now everyone has to work from home. And also there's tracking devices, so they can tell your how productive you are. They can see if you're at your thing, how much you're typing. And she found right away that people are monstrously more productive at home than they are at the office. So she made this decision 2 months ago that once we can reopen and everyone can go back to the office, everyone is going to be mandated to work from home 2 days a week.
You know, I especially think that once they get schools back up and running, I think that a lot of people will definitely want to work from home. I know that, look, I know you have young children, and I can't tell you how many times.
Running behind me.
I can't tell you how many times I've seen Brendan on a call and his daughter's doing her virtual classroom behind him. But, you know, it has worked out, I know, really well, and I know it's going to continue to work out. Brendan,
yeah. But I'm lucky because my wife is a stay at home. She doesn't have a job, so she could take it up. But I know so many, both people work and they work a lot, and it's just really hard to also be a teacher. But you're right. When the kids are out of the office, working from home is going to be amazing. You have the house to yourself.
Brendan, I know I kind of asked you a little bit about what you thought about the economy and things like that, but I think what I'd like to do is wrap this up by, maybe talking a little bit about some of the categories of business that you think will be able to thrive. I mean, you did mention technology, and that is one that we've really relied on during the coronavirus crisis. What are some of the other categories? I mean, do you see, grocery shopping, delivery services, people like Instacart and businesses like that really being able to take advantage of kind of this new abnormal, as I like to call it?
Yeah, I think you're totally right. And kind of going back to my point about technology adoption, now my mom does Instacart, where she would have never done that before. I mean, I think when she can safely go to the grocery store, she won't do 100%, but now those things are much more comfortable to her. And I think also the payments industry. So my old life, I covered the payments, the Visa and MasterCard and everything like that. So sure. I think also this experience is going to just accelerate the move from cash to digital payments. Sweden is 99% electronic payment. They just basically don't have money anymore. I don't think we're going to go that quickly, but we're getting there. Now I see what restaurants are doing, because menus are potentially transmit the virus. They just put a piece of paper with a barcode on it, and you scan it on your phone, and then on your phone comes up the menu. So I think little things like that are going to keep accelerating the adoption of digital payments. So out of this, you know, I say the big winners are, you know, like the PayPals of the world and the Visas and MasterCards.
You know, on the Sport Lifestyle Podcast, I'm the old man of the group. I'm the baby boomer. And of course, Mike would be our Gen Xer. And then of course, John is the millennial. And, you know, the millennial loves to bust my chops about, you know, my use of technology and things like that. I mean, I'm not really that big into Instagram and a couple of other things, but, you know, it's interesting to see a lot of my peers, baby boomer peers, really starting to get into using technology, whether it's Zoom or, you know, just like you said, the ability to be able to look at a menu, you know, on their phone or some device like that.
Yeah, yeah. And then you're just kind of forced to do it. So whether you want to do it or not, you don't have any other option, you know.
Hey, I want to thank Brendan Walsh, partner at Data Market Services, for being on the Sport Lifestyle Podcast today. You know, there's a lot going on with the economy, really understanding some of the intricacies of what's happening. Brendan's been able to shed some light on what's going on, and hopefully we'll have Brendan back on as things move along and we can go revisit some of the predictions we made today. Brendan, thanks for being on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And the thing that keeps me going is, well, this is going to be hard. We went through it with the Spanish flu. It took 2 years. But then after that, we had the Roaring 20s. So, you know, the next couple of years could be great once we get through this one.
Just a little plug also for your podcast. Don't forget to listen to Brendan and his co-host on the HPS Macrocast. I've listened a few times, and they are really good about identifying a lot of the key signals that our economy is sending out so that we can understand exactly what's going on out there. Brendan, thanks a lot again.
Thanks.
You can subscribe to this podcast on all major podcast platforms. Until next time, play hard or at least look good doing it.